What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Take the Black Live, the show where we go over everything involving sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, books, dragons, robots, space lasers, etc. My name is Dan Selke. I'm here with Daniel Roman, who is on a couch. And we have people like Julie Davies and Martha Lilly in the chat talking to us, here to watch us talk about all those things. There may be some technical choppy waters ahead, so I'm just warning you ahead of time, but maybe not. Daniel, how are you, dear?
I'm good. I am, as you said, I'm on this couch here because it gets a little bit better, internet, apparently, than my office. So we're going to see how it goes because we're streaming a little bit differently here today. But yeah, good to see you in the chat, Julie and Martha. How are you, Dan? What's up in your life?
I'm good. It's getting warm here in Chicago, and I don't have the window units installed yet, so I'm getting kind of hot. But, you know, I'll just use that energy to talk about all things House of the Dragon, because we have a lot to talk about. And people, just as an aside, I love making fun of Daniel's bad internet. It's my favorite thing to do. I've said he lives in a treehouse. I said he lives in the bottom of a volcano. I said he lives on top of a mountain. I said it goes over and over and over. There's a million one jokes you can say about it.
Yeah.
But all That's respectful true. And all from love. Daniel, we have less than two weeks before the second season of House of the Dragon premieres on HBO and Max. And
wild.
I thought today we would have a couple of parts. Part one, we're going to go over some more frivolous stuff. They had the big premiere event, Middle of the Ocean. That's a good one. JP, thank you. Keep them coming.
JP.
The big premiere event where a lot of the actors stomped the green carpet. Very clever. And that will be non-spoilery. And then also go into some spoilers because there is some interesting chatter around that I would love your help making sense of. Pictures that I don't know what they show. Quotes that I don't know what they mean, and I want your help and all of your help deciphering what they mean. And if we have time, maybe we'll talk about a couple things that have nothing to do with dragons, but what's the point? Okay, first up, this past Tuesday, the cast and crew of House of the Dragon gathered in New York City, which I think is a couple hours from where you live, to watch the season 2 premiere in some kind of theater. And as these Hollywood types do, they got dolled up for the occasion. I always like this. I'm a person who enjoys looking people on the red carpet, or in this case, they made it the green carpet because green, get it? Greens and blacks, very clever. We got Olivia Cook and Emma Darcy here looking. They together look great. Because Emma Darcy has a great sense of style. It's kind of unorthodox. She's wearing like a sequined glittering men's suit with a tie, standing next to Olivia Cooke in her blue ball gown. Love it.
Chef's kiss.
Tom Glenn Carney, who plays King Aegon Targaryen, the only one to actually go with the theme. He's wearing green. I love it. I love
He's the king.
He's the king. Yeah. He's also wearing like, this isn't a fashion podcast, obviously. I wouldn't know what to do if it was. I also like the prom night ruffles that are going down the front of his shirt. Very cool.
It's very classy. Very period.
Very period. We also have Bethany Antonia playing Bela Targaryen and Harry Colet playing her fiance slash blood relation, Jaehaerys Velaryon, both dragon riders, both wearing black because they are on team black and we coordinate colors here. On Wednesdays, we wear black.
It's true. In support of team black. Yeah, I like seeing Jace and Bela there on the green carpet. Oh, who's
I like in general. Next? Okay, I had this is one last one. Although first, before I do this, let's talk a little bit. I like how, can I just say, I am very happy with how HBO has promoted the whole show. I am very happy with the surfeit of commercials, of trailers, of images, of interviews. Like a lot of the cast was going on. Stephen Colbert, Olivia Cooke was on. Matt Smith was on. Jimmy Fallon. We had folk on Good Morning America. We had folk on
CNN. I don't know,
some CBS show. Sorry?
See, I'm pretty sure Matt Smith, or maybe it was Tom Glenn Carney, one of them was on CNN. So they really, HBO has really gone all out with the promo. And I totally agree with you. I'm very happy with it. I feel like a lot of the streamers, this is one of those things that reminds me, yes, HBO is an actual TV network that knows how to do things. Because a lot of the streamers just don't do this for their shows. They just jettison them out into the void. Even when they do a lot of promotion, it's nowhere near the level of what House of the Dragon is getting, which, who knows, maybe there's some small correlation there between that promo effort and the numbers, but also it's a good show.
HBO has been doing it for a long time. You're right. Okay.
They have.
This final
they know what's up.
They know what's up. And even this premiere event feels special. I mean, they got green carpet for the red versus blacks, for the greens versus blacks. They did it up. That's just fun. It's fun to have these little things like this.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I had to put this picture of Matthew Needham, who plays Laris Strong, in here because I find it haunting the way that the sleeves sort of blend into the body of the jacket, the way his hands just kind of like hang straight down to his sides like they're weights. He's doing nothing with his arms. He's staring straight ahead, frowning, with kind of like an expressionless expression. I find this photo haunting and I enjoy it. And I can't tell if it's just the fact that I know he plays a creepy schemer on the television show or if this photo just really is creepy. But if this is the kind of energy that he gives off normally, I think they made a good choice in casting him for the part of Laris Strong.
See, now I thought you were going to say you couldn't get past or stop thinking about how he's just got the one foot out there in the picture, because that's what I immediately noticed. kind of got one foot out there just a little bit forward, making me think of Laris's footy fetishes.
You brought it up.
This I poor said no. guy. Yeah, I did. How are you not going to bring it up? I wonder how long it will follow him in his career, this particular choice that House of the Dragon has made for his character.
I did think he gave a good performance in season one. I liked him a lot.
Oh, he was great. He's great.
And I like the fact that they're fronting a lot more of the characters. Like, again, we had Bethany Antonio. We had Harry Cullet. We had Tom Glen Carney. Ewan Mitchell's in the mix. A lot of the younger characters. It's going to be much more of an ensemble show this season. It's going to be a lot more sprawling in terms of geography and in terms of kind of the points of view that we partake in. We know that Jacerys is going to go to Winterfell. We know that Daemon's going to be in Harrenhal. We know that Alison will be in King's Landing. Rhaenyra will be in Dragonstone. We know that Rhaena Targaryen is going to the Vale. Like, it's going to be a good old-fashioned sprawl fest, which is dangerous but also exciting because shows got to change, and I say bring on the change, bring on the strange, bring on the fun, and bring in the funk. We also have, finally, this picture of... We got Matt Smith as Daemon Targaryen. He's wearing a suit. He looks fine. Olivia Cooke as Alison Hightower. Emma D'Arcy as Rhaenyra Targaryen. And House of Dragon showrunner Ryan Condal. Which, by the way, the Getty images mislabeled Ryan Condal as some completely different person. Something I noticed when I was looking through them. I forget who said, but like, it was just fully not the name Ryan Condal. It was like Biff Whiff. It was like a completely different name. And I'm like, somebody messed this up. I don't know who I get in contact with about this, but apologies to Ryan Condal for that. But they look good, exciting. Again, I just love the fact that they put on an event like this at all. It means they have a lot of confidence.
Yeah.
It means that they are going hard. And I like it when networks go hard on programs.
Yeah, I mean, you know, on the one hand, I love this too. I love seeing this sort of promotional effort. I think in general, HBO has really, really killed it with their House of the Dragon promo, from the theme trailers to just the overall run into things to even that slightly suspicious trailer leak a day early that meant that they rained on the Rings of Power's parade the day that they released their trailer. It's just been a fun, fun ride. So, love to see it. I do have to say, and I don't know if you have this on here, there have been a lot of quotes. There have been a lot of early impressions going around from this premiere. And that baffles me a little bit. The influencer impressions saying a little bit more than they maybe should. But it's a risk that's worth taking here, because it's wonderful that they're stoking the hype like this around a week and a half out.
Let's move on to that, because the next section is more spoilery.
Okay.
And the next section is, what are folks saying about this? Because they're not supposed to be saying anything. You're not supposed to say any, like, give any impressions.
No,
but
nothing.
When you pack a theater full of influencers, it's going to happen. That surprises you, really? Because I'm gonna say, like, influencers sign an NDA. They're influencers. Like, they're in the social media economy. You get that click. I'm not surprised at all things are leaking out.
Well, I guess what I would say, I'm not surprised influencers are leaking stuff. I think you're right. I think that's kind of par for the course. I guess what surprises me more is there's been kind of like a rise, sort of influx of influencers at these sorts of events that have typically been media events in the past. I think the streaming companies have leaned into that a lot. I'm a little surprised to see HBO do it to the same degree that is resulting in like some plot details being leaked by just careless people who could care less about their NDAs. But generally speaking, the hype is the hype, and in a week we'll all have seen it anyway. So who cares that much? I guess it doesn't surprise me that influencers are spreading their influence. It just surprises me how trusting HBO has become. Thinking back to the days where they were like trying to shoot down drones and stuff over the Game of Thrones set. And now they're like, come influencers, spread the good word about who will get up to what in season two.
Well, I mean, There is a difference between trying to like snap pictures while shows going on and then attending a red carpet event. I mean, if Jeremy Renner and Tom Holland are spilling spoilers about what happens in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I don't know. I think there's some level where you just accept this kind of thing. The entire idea of squelching spoilers, I think it's a fruitless, Sisyphean, who's the guy who tilted at windmills?
Don Quixote.
Don Quixote-esque. So,
any of them. Battle. Those are all good examples. Those are all good metaphors. I think that's fair. I think, especially with something like this, where it's like, they can only surprise the fans so much with something like this, where it is being adapted from a source material. So I think that's a fair. I think that's a fair thing. Once the spoilers start leaking out, there's only so much they can do. And I guess I'd rather them lean into being okay with a few getting out than doing like kind of silly things like Marvel did, where they like doctor their trailers for some like Eternals and Spider-Man No Way Home to hide spoilers ineffectually that people just figure out anyway. So that's fair. That's fair.
Although, if we went, we would abide by our NDAs to the letter, not share anything. Just FYI, HBO, if you're listening, invite us. We'd love to be there. Like Julie, mine just got lost in the mail, but next time, I'm sure I'll get two to make up for it. All right. Speaking of things, let's talk about some of the things that have been going around. Both the things the actors were saying, some of the photos I want your help with, and some of the leaks. Let's start with one thing I've noticed Matt Smith saying a lot. Okay, maybe this is just me, but Matt Smith is talking about Daemon Targaryen's arc on the second season of House of the Dragon. And I'm not sure what is going to happen, but it sounds intense and extreme and doesn't sound much like the book. Like, he's saying things like this to Variety. We definitely meet Daemon at a point of crisis in the situation, and in many ways, it's a different version of him. It's one that's much weaker. We start to see the mask slip, life becomes more difficult, and he gets soft around the edges. He starts to unravel. And then to CBS Morning, I think he sort of tumbles into anonymity in a way. He gets sort of softer, lazier, fatter, slower. And he's sort of haunted by his demons, by ghosts, by apparitions. The weight of all the bad deeds that he's done really come back to roost, so to speak. And I think it becomes more exposed. Daniel, what the hell's going to happen to Daemon in season two? This all sounds very extreme. Like, because in Fire and Blood, he's kind of in his element. Like, it's war. He likes war and he likes violence. And he's going around convincing River Lords to bend the knee to Rhaenyra. So it confuses me a bit where I see him saying all these things. He's going to get slower, fatter, weaker. It's like, what's going to happen? What are they doing?
Well, so this doesn't concern me at all. And I feel like it's kind of in line with what I am expecting. I think there's just an element of Matt Smith is, you know, when he's saying these things, he's kind of talking about maybe different parts of where Daemon is in the season. And he's not necessarily going to start in that same position, because whenever I think of these quotes, and he's been saying stuff like this, like you said, it's been like a couple of weeks. He's kind of been hinting at Daemon having this very different arc in season two. I think there are a few sides to this. One, the main thing I think about when I hear these is where Daemon is going to end up. So this is a spoiler alert from Fire and Blood, full disclosure. But by the time Daemon gets to an event called the God's Eye, which we're expecting probably next season, to say it's not happening this season. The God's Eye, essentially, Daemon pretty much gives up. That's like the end of his part in the war. And he basically just decides it's not really worth sticking it out anymore. And he kind of sets himself up for this big climactic moment. But that is very much like, that is an exhausted Daemon in Fire and Blood by that point. By the time the reason, which we can't get, I don't want to get too much into, it has to do with Nettles and Rhaenyra's thoughts about Nettles and Daemon. But he's just kind of like gives up at that point. So I think to get from where Daemon is in season one, where he is the rogue prince, He's very wild. He's very unpredictable. To Damon is going to essentially just kind of surrender to fate and say, screw it, I'm done. By I'm guessing mid to late season three. I think we need to have some kind of arc in season two where he's a little reflective of his choices. It sounds like he's going to be kind of haunted by visions or dreams in Harrenhal, where he's going to spend a decent amount of time this season, which Harrenhal is like a haunted castle. So that's kind of fitting. So this doesn't really worry me. I just wonder how much he's kind of, you know, broad brushstrokes describing a whole arc Damon's going to get this season. And so that's one side of it. The other side is, I think we have to keep in mind when he's talking about Damon being like fatter and lazier and slower, that he's really like one of the few characters, one of the few actors like him and like Fabian Frankel, Kristen Cole, who like they've had kind of physical roles that they've been playing since the start of the show. So like Emma Darcy hasn't conveyed the same sort of passage of years for Rhaenyra as like Matt Smith is for Damon. So I'm sure that like Damon in his 40s, 50s, whatever he is in season two, I don't know off the top of my head. Yeah. So that Damon is of course going to be a slower, lazier physically Damon than he was in the beginning episodes of season one, where he's jousting, he's a bad boy, he gives no shits, and he just wants, you know, King Viserys's approval. So that's my very long-winded response to this and why it doesn't necessarily worry me. Does that assuage your concerns a little, or like, do you think that's all nonsense? Like, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I wouldn't say I'm worried, just I thought it was curious because I didn't really see that in the book. But you're right that he does get to a point in the book eventually, kind of beyond this season, where he does take a bit of a turn, although the reasons for it are sort of cryptic. So I guess perhaps they're building to whatever they've decided the reasons are.
That's a good point. They could be kind of filling in the emotional gaps in Damon to get him from point A to point B, because it is kind of a drastic turn. And you're right, it is left very, very purposely cryptic in the book, why he makes the decisions he makes. So I can't wait to see what he does with it.
Yeah, no, I like that explanation, because there is a gap in Fire and Blood. I like my explanation, and the one that you just helped with. I like everybody's. Where he does take this turn towards the end, the Battle of the God's Eye, which we won't see this season, where he does do it, but like there's some bits that aren't really filled in. They're not really happening this season, but I could see them trying to get there, because we know that they have an ending in mind now. Okay, I do feel better. Not that I felt bad, but now I feel great.
Yes.
We also have some very pretty new photos, I think, worth taking a look at. Oh, I have to do this. Let's see. We have this lovely image of Emma Darcy as Rhaenyra Targaryen, with Eve Best as Rhaenys Targaryen, and that is Jaime Kenna as Sir Alfred Broom on the right. I think it's worth looking at, because we know that there's going to be a lot of new characters this season. There's going to be Tom Taylor as Cregan Stark. There's going to be Jane Arryn, who is played by a woman whose name may remember off the top of your head. There are other smaller characters that Amanda Collin, that they haven't mentioned a whole lot, but could be big. Like in the book, Sir Alfred Broom does end up becoming kind of important. He is.
Yes, he does.
A senior knight on Dragonstone, that in the book, I can't say this had to happen in the show, but Rhaenyra kind of passes him over for a promotion, even though he's the senior guy, because he's a grump and nobody likes him. And that ends up having some consequences down the line. We've talked about House of the Dragon in terms of how closely does it resemble the book? How faithful is it? And it has struck a really cool balance where it is faithful in a lot of ways, and then it kind of goes off right field sometimes. But this feels like, I remember in the first season, we were like, oh, wow, so they're going to keep all the names. Like, oh, wow, they're going to include like all the different layers of relations, including Sir Alfred Broom. Feels like that. Feels like it's a character who I could see being cut in an adaptation that didn't care much about the special. Because you I can envision a version of the story where they just kind of cut through him and make someone else do what he does. But that they have him in it tells me that, oh, it's still Ryan Condal. Oh, it's still someone who loves this book. And, oh, George R. R. Martin is still over his shoulder being like, I wouldn't do that. And him reacting.
Yeah, Alfred Broom, he's not a character I've thought even the tiniest bit about, literally, until this moment. And I do agree with you. I think including him, it is kind of a why include him if they're not going to set up some of the down the line things? Because I think Alfred Broom, there are these kinds of twists in Game of Thrones with people who feel slighted and then they react to being slighted in a wartime. I think we saw that a few times in A Song of Ice and Fire. And Sir Alfred Broom is one of the really good representations of it in Fire and Blood. So I am really glad to see that they're keeping him. And I'm more like excited than nervous, because you're right. It has struck an interesting balance in terms of sometimes going really far afield or making choices that are interesting. And sometimes, you know, sticking very rigidly to the characters, the relation of who characters are to each other. You know, they had Eric and Eric Cargill. There was a time we weren't even sure if they were going to include people like that. So yeah, I'm all for Alfred Broom. I would imagine that this scene that we got that photo of is probably going to be like an introductory scene for him. Maybe we'll just start to get the barest glimpse of the stick up his butt in that scene that will eventually lead to some strife.
As Karen Pettitz asks, does anyone else feel like time is standing still while waiting for June 16th to get here? I would answer no, at least for me, because they keep on doing stuff. JP, there's some photos right now. I just looked on Twitter. Yeah, they're dumping like 30,000 new photos. Man, they just won't stop. I feel like
exciting,
I am. It's exciting. But geez, give a guy a break. We also got this cool new photo. I love the way the Iron Throne looks in this shot of Aegon sitting on it.
Yeah.
I love them accentuating the porcupine-likeness of the throne. You can put an eye out on that thing. And finally, I wanted to ask this question of the audience, of you, of God, if he's listening.
Oh, what a good picture.
Where is Aemond in this picture? Because I can't tell.
Oh, that's a good question. That looks like a mural of, I can't tell if it's the Red Keep or Dragonstone behind him, but that slash of color almost looks like either a dragon or fire to me. I would guess this is somewhere in the Red Keep. I don't know what room. It could be a room we haven't seen before. JP says Harrenhal. You know, that is an interesting question of how much will we see Aemond in Harrenhal this season? My gut says we may see him kind of get to Harrenhal near the end of the season. Kind of maybe setting that up so that we almost get like the duality of Aemond and Daemon, where season two is Daemon and Harrenhal and season three is Aemond and Harrenhal, which again, I guess this is spoilers because you may not know that Aemond eventually ends up there too.
Mild.
I don't know why the mural makes, and the color palette, you know, it makes me think of, it's got to be somewhere in the Red Keep. What do you think, Dan?
I still don't know. I have Richard saying that looks like a bedpost behind his right arm. I don't see it. Headboard. Sorry, Richard.
Oh, yeah. I don't kind of see that.
Well, maybe. Then you have freak eyes. It almost looks like the wall to me, but it couldn't be the wall. Or like a cave. I don't know, but it makes the most sense for him to be in a bedroom in the Red Keep. I just didn't know what I was looking at.
Dragon pit. JP says dragon pit. That's a pretty decent prediction too, I think.
Ooh, I like that one. See, yeah, dragon pit.
That's the thing with King's Landing is there are so many cool iconic locations he could be that are all in King's Landing. Which is where he's going to be primarily based when he's not afield this season in the war effort. That I just, I imagine it's probably somewhere there. He looks kind of, you know, he's got his typical aim and arms, you know, held behind the back sort of pose. He looks at ease here. He's not wearing armor. So, yeah, my money is on somewhere in King's Landing, but I wouldn't be willing to stake too much on the exact location quite yet.
It's an outer space. No more. As for the impressions, a lot of them are coming in. We got a lot of praise for Emma Darcy and Tom Glenn Carney. I mean, in general, being pleased and happy with it. There was one one TikToker named Fantastic Frankie who gave away some light spoilers. I'm going to share those and I'm going to keep the bigger ones to myself. Like, and really, they probably shouldn't be doing this, but as long as they do, I'm going to claim guiltless by association.
Oh, man.
She was asked.
I didn't even see last one. Whew.
She was asked, like, how many dragons do you see in the premiere? 3. How many sex scenes are there in the premiere? 2. Is Jace at Winterfell? Maybe. I won't answer that one. Go seek it out. And then we have a couple of people.
I think that's the right choice.
Yeah, right. And then we have a couple of people talking about some kind of big twist, as Lady Dragon JJ says on X, this episode might break the fandom and it won't be because of Blood and Cheese, who I get the feeling are going to be in the second episode, but because something else that utterly shocked me. And I've seen little hints of that. I'm not going to say what it is. But if you go looking, you can probably find it. And I don't find it particularly shocking, but I'm interested to see what happens with it.
Certainly not as shocking as Blood and Cheese is going to be to me. We'll see. I'm reserving judgment till I see what they're talking about. I'm still expecting Blood and Cheese in the premiere, personally. I think it'll happen at the end of the premiere and we'll get the fallout in episode 2. House of the Dragon, establish yourself as a show that loves horrifying your audiences.
No.
But there is House reason of the Dragon, to think.
Establish yourself as a well-paced, measured, and elegantly written show that uncoils like a beautiful slinky and that doesn't get to things too fast.
I think we just said the same thing. There is reason to think something pretty wild is going to happen in episode 2, though, right? Because one of the other bits of information that has come out this week is that episode 202, the second episode of season 2, is 72 minutes long, which is the longest episode of the entire series that we know of. We don't know the runtimes past episode 2. But that's pretty exciting. Why do you think the oversized runtime?
Because I think that Blood and Cheese in episode 2 is what I think. It's cool. I mean, I would prefer more episodes at shorter rather than fewer episodes that are longer. But the occasional long boy, sure, I'll enjoy as long as it can has enough substance to. Although I disapprove of the Stranger Things size movie episodes. I don't like that. I think just make a movie at that point. I don't think that's really TV. I want them to be episodes, like short films, episodes of TV, not movies. And I still think the industry is kind of reckoning with that a bit of what to do with this freedom. But we'll see how House of Dragon handles it. I wish it was episodes, but I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
So good.
I agree with you on the, you know, I do love a good oversized episode. But I think the trend of that being a norm is probably not the best overall. Stranger Things is kind of my one exception to this because it is kind of sitting somewhere between that line of this is television, but the finale is basically a movie. They clearly know both formats well enough that it didn't feel like they were just trying to figure it out and had too long of episodes. But yeah, I Okay, fair. So you think blood and cheese is going to happen in episode two? That's part of the runtime. I also wonder if we could see the battle.
To be fair, I don't know, but that is my strong suspicion.
That's fair. I wonder if the battle of the Burning Mill will be very, very small, like just, and we could get a glimpse of it in episode two as like a sort of, you know, things are escalating across the kingdom. I also wonder if we're going to see Jane Aaron in the second episode. So there's a lot of stuff that could happen in that 70 minutes. Robert Harris here dropping the truths. He thinks 70 minutes is a good runtime. 50-ish minutes sometimes seems too short. Robert, I like your style.
I'll go with 60, but whatever. We're all quibbling. Daniel, anything else to talk about House the Dragon before we move on and then come back next week with more? And then in 2 weeks, we'll be watching the thing.
I don't think I have anything too specific yet. I wish we had a picture, but I forgot to grab it. We found out that the commander of the Triarchy has been cast in the next season.
Abigail Thorne.
Abigail Thorne is playing, I think it's Shirako Lohar is the character's name. And that is so they've gender flipped the Triarchy commander from the books, which I think could work pretty well considering that it's like a naval captain who's like one step away from a pirate. They really have a lot of freedom with what they do with that character. But I forgot until I was researching them how large the repercussions of their actions are, because that character features in the Battle of the Gullet. So I do wonder if we're going to see the Gullet this season after hearing that casting announcement, or if that's just going to be set up next season and they're going to open with the Gullet or something like that. Either way, exciting times.
It's going to be weird for me because I've been watching Abigail Thorne like on her YouTube videos for literally years.
Oh, wow.
And it's going to be odd for me to see her in like an acting role and not say like, it's Philosophy Tube. She makes like these hour long videos about like philosophy and stuff that are pretty good.
Gotcha. That explains the Twitter handle. I did notice that was her Twitter handle. And I was like, all right, I don't know what the Philosophy Tube is about, but yeah, I like Philosophy Tube. I support it. Gotcha. That's cool. Well, she's getting around a lot lately. And one other show we can talk about whenever we move on from House of the Dragon. She's also right in now. The Acolyte. She hasn't appeared yet in The Acolyte, but she is in the cast of it. I don't have anything too much else to add. Robert, BNC would be good for episode one if you want to pull in the casuals
again. Or terrify them away. Wisdom.
Yeah, well, you gotta separate the what is it, the wheat from the chaff. You gotta figure out who's a viewer of your show and who just can't stomach the brutal dark depths that lie ahead.
This is a TV show, not like Battle Royale. We want people to watch.
It is a TV show that is exactly Battle Royale. We're going to watch a family disintegrate themselves from the inside and murder each other over the course of several seasons until basically none of them are left. Spoiler alert. I don't have anything else to add. Do you want to hit on any other House of the Dragon stuff before we move on to the rest of our television and reading and gaming and whatever diet?
Beyond more metaphors for what House of the Dragon is, I don't really have anything else to say. What are we watching? Always a regular topic that we do around here. I'm going to take the Black Live. And is it The Acolyte, the new Star Wars show starring a bunch of people, including Carrie Ann Moss and others? Because I watched the two episodes last night. Have you seen this? Have you heard about this?
Yeah, I watched them last night specifically so that we could talk about them today. Carrie Ann Moss. So starring Amanda Stenberg is the lead character of this show. Lee Jung-jae, who is right there on the front right of that image. He's playing a Jedi Master who is also one of the main characters of this show. He was the main actor from Squid Game. Next to him is Daphne Keene.
Daphne Keene.
Who, Logan. You know, Lyra from The Golden Compass. And I forget the name of, I think it's Yord, and I don't know who the Jedi in the back is. But yeah, so The Acolyte is Disney's latest Star Wars show. It's set during the High Republic era of Star Wars, which, if you're not familiar, basically that is a new Star Wars era that started rolling out books, comics, stuff like that, maybe like 2-ish years ago. Like, it's fairly new. This is an invention of the Disney era of Star Wars, and it's basically 100 or so years before The Phantom Menace, when peace ruled in the galaxy and the Jedi were at their height, but also kind of blind and corrupt, which is really not that different from the prequel trilogy setup when you stop to think about it. But yeah, so that, and into this, there's kind of an assassination plot where someone's going around killing Jedi. And Dan, what did you think about this? I have a lot of thoughts about this, but I'm curious to hear yours.
I have a few thoughts, and the same as yours, pretty much. Yeah, I think you're right. You wrote here, not bad, not great. Folk comparing it to Andor, that's just silly. They are extremely different in tone. I like it.
Yeah,
it
totally
held my attention, more or less. It does have that thing that things like Ahsoka had. Maybe the later Mandalorian seasons, especially Ahsoka, where there is just kind of a flatness to it, where the characters kind of say who they are and say what they mean. And then they get into a conflict between the characters who are this and mean this and want to do this. And they all tell us really plainly. I guess what I'm missing from some of these Star Wars shows like this, which again, wasn't bad, or Ahsoka 2, is a bit more ambiguity, a bit more naughtiness, a bit more depth. I liked it. I will also say this is a spoiler, but a minor one, because it's the very first scene. Carrie Ann Moss, I thought, played the best character in both episodes. I thought she was the most compelling person on screen. And she dies in the very first scene. Just like, I know it's a spoiler, but it's the very first scene, so I don't think I'm going too far out of here. And I was like, why would you front that? Why would you give me like the best scene of the entire 2-episode run, and it's over, and you're never topping it? Like, save that for later.
Yeah, I did. Well, you know, they wanted a strong hook to get people in, but I do think it's kind of hilarious because, like, I've seen Carrie Ann Moss on the interview circuit, and her name has been one of the big ones in the cast, like The Acolyte, starring all these people, and Carrie Ann Moss. And it's like, she's literally in the... Maybe we'll see more of her later, which I'm hoping we get some kind of flashback. I think they've kind of laid, we could see that.
Yeah,
but even still, it does feel a little like, okay, you got, you know, Trinity from The Matrix to do basically the most Matrixy scene you could possibly think of, and then gave her an exit. You had Carrie Ann Moss for 1 week of filming, and we know it, Disney. But I, yeah, it was good. I found myself thinking a lot of, you know, George Lucas has been talking a little bit lately, as George Lucas occasionally does. And one of the things he said in an interview recently was, a different thing he said in an interview recently was talking about how, in his opinion, part of the reason that the prequel movies got the pushback they did when they first came out was because of all the people who saw the original movies when they were kids. And then by the time of the prequels, they didn't want to think of them as kids' movies anymore, even though they were always for kids. So the goofy, ridiculous things like Jar Jar Binks or some of the things meant to appeal to kids, adults kind of railed against and said were stupid. And I think there are truths and maybe not truths to that argument. Like, the prequels do also have their rough spots, and, you know, they're for kids, but they're also, you know, the easy joke is kids care so much about trade disputes between intergalactic, you know, trading partners, because that's the setup of the first movie. But like, all that aside, I do kind of agree with him though. And I found myself thinking about that a lot in The Acolyte, because The Acolyte does feel geared to a younger audience, and not in a bad way. Just that's the type of show it is. That's why I think like people comparing it to Andor, I've seen so many reviews that are like, this is like Andor. It exists in its own bubble and it's edgy and compelling. And like, it's really not that edgy. It's a pretty decent Star Wars show. I don't think it's at the bad end of Star Wars whatsoever. I do think there is, it's funny. You said, and you were talking about the writing and the characters a little bit. I was also thinking of the production a little bit, because there's something about
it is just
the CGI for like the zoom outs, like, oh, we're on Coruscant. Here's a sweeping shot of Coruscant, and it's lifeless to me compared to like, you know, what Lucas did with his movies, or even what Disney did with some of their Star Wars things early in their Star Wars run before they were mass producing it every, you know, 6 months. So I think The Acolyte is, I'm going to keep watching it. I want to see where it goes. There's being like really too invested, and it's probably just Star Wars overexposure, but also there are some things about it that, don't quite grip me. The comparisons to Andor just blow them up. They just baffle me. You don't need to do that.
Yeah, that's
you're gonna
silly.
Set people up to be disappointed because they're just different shows.
I don't think Star is exactly aimed at kids. I'd say more teens.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Kid show. This is a show. The plot is an assassin is going around the galaxy murdering people. And we
kids
watch
love
her
assassins.
Murder.
They love
people.
A good murder.
Teenagers love assassins. Kids like Bluey. So I don't really buy that it's supposed to be for kids.
Okay, fair.
I don't think it's supposed to be for adults. It doesn't really have a ton of depth to it, the way that Andor would. But teens think that killing is badass. It's cool. Like, I don't think kids think that yet. And, you know, it's like this whole thing of, you killed my whole family in a fire, and we're going, you have these doubts and these regrets, and I'll prey on those. This sounds like a kid show to you. This sounds like diet adult drama to me. This sounds like you're aiming for these more almost tragic themes of these Jedi failed people, and people died, and they all died in a fire, and the sisters separated, and the one killed all their parents, and the one so guilt-ridden that he chooses to, well, spoiler, something. This, none of this is kid stuff. This is,
That's
adult stuff simplified for teens. That's the tone this is hitting for me.
Which Andor feels like adult stuff, and it's basically, I think you're right, of course, kids loosely here, and what I'm really talking about is teens, and I think that is kind of what Lucas was talking about as well, even though like I liked Star Wars as a little kid, not even just a teen.
Sure.
So I do think there's room there, because kids like laser swords and blasters and aliens and stuff like
True.
That. But I do think that you're right about Star Wars kind of always has taken adult things and simplified them for teens to a degree. I think Andor did the opposite, where it took a Star Wars theme of the rebellion, which is rebellion simplified for teens to understand and get that it's good to fight back against autocratic empires and whatever. And Andor took that and then adultified it again. Back to, but actually rebellion is messy and morally gray in the best of circumstances. And what does that do to the people involved in it? And The Acolyte, it's something about the tone, Dan. It's not that the events are like kid-friendly Bluey murder. Like, obviously that's not it. But there's Bluey something murder. About the tone of this thing that feels like 12-year-olds would love it. And that's a good thing. Like, I'm not saying that's bad, but it's a specific kind of Star Wars tone that I relate to, like the animated Star Wars shows a little bit. that I think has sure. kind of become like the dominant tone of Star Wars. And like, that's also what the High Republic is. Like the High Republic storytelling in the books and the comics, like those are all geared at kids and young adults. Like there aren't really, to the best of my knowledge, don't at me, Star Wars stands if I'm wrong. There aren't really a lot of High Republic adult things. Like they, like in terms of like where the books are like shelved, like they are kid, they're, it's called middle grade and young adult. So yeah. like they are specifically made for kids, those books, mm-hmm. in a way that I think the tone of The Acolyte also is in line with. But all that said, like, it's still a cool time. If you want to see lots of different colored lightsabers, yeah, it's worth, you know, checking out. You might enjoy it. I think I might enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I'm just not sure yet.
I don't mind it. I'll probably keep watching. I also want to interview with the vampire. That show continues to rock. And this Sunday, I saw the episode early. Really, really good. The new episode is a banger. So anyone who's following Interview with the Vampire, settle in for a nice, tasty treat on Sunday, because I think it's the best one they've done yet.
I'm Daniel, so curious. I saw you tweet about it. I was like, ooh, what's going to happen in this one? I'm trying to think of like the story without going into spoilers. Like there's the theater de vampires, and then there's the fallout from that. So yeah, I'm very intrigued, because Interview with the Vampire is a cool story and it's doing really well so far.
Come on it. I watched The Orville.
You did. Well, to be fair, I don't have AMC Plus. So this is totally a, what streaming service can I watch it on without subscribing to more streaming services? And unfortunately, I just don't have access to it. I might watch the premiere episode, which you can watch on Amazon, but I do want to watch it.
I don't
either. I would have started it.
I think I've only watched the screeners. I haven't watched any of the
respect.
AMC Plus. Okay. Good.
That's
for me.
That's fair.
All right. Finally, yeah. Let's run through the WIC News lightning round. Take 20 seconds.
Okay. Wait, can I? One more thing I've been watching, aside from the Alien Romulus trailer on loop. It's great. Godzilla Minus One is now on Netflix. Yeah, I feel like that PSA needs to be said for anyone who hasn't seen Godzilla Minus One on Netflix. It is really excellent. I hadn't seen it. I watched it a couple days ago and was floored. Really, really great movie. Have you seen that one, Dan?
No, but I really want to, so I'll definitely be partaking of that.
It's so good. I would watch it. If you don't mind subtitles, I would do it that way.
Oh, yeah.
So Netflix defaults it to the dub. I started watching the dub and was like, this just doesn't really feel very good. Like, it didn't work quite as well. And I saw a clip online of like the last line of the movie from the dub, and they changed a couple of words in that last line that make it a lot less impactful. So this is one of those instances where I'm going to say, Jeff, watch the subtitled original Japanese version.
I'm such a subtitle snob. I will, if someone chooses the dub in front of me, I'm like, so yeah, I'm on about the subtitles. We also watched last weekend, The Pianist, the Oscar winning movie by Roman Polanski about the Holocaust from the early 2000s that Adrian Brody won an Oscar for. That was sad.
Nice.
But we watched it and it was pretty good. All right.
I bet. And, whoa, fantasy fan, tired of Alien movies. I probably will skip Romulus. Look, Romulus looks like Alien in the vein of the original Alien. It looks terrifying. I've already been informed by my partner. I have to go watch it by myself in theaters. She's not going to come with me. I can't wait for that movie. Yeah, but we can always have more Alien. More Alien doing more Alien stuff will always be good as long as the movies are good. Well, that's a fair question. And I don't know the answer. This is one of those things where it has to prove itself, you know? And every bit of promotional stuff that I see for this Alien makes me more inclined to give it the benefit of the doubt. I think they're doing some interesting stuff. They're calling back to the horror of Alien in a way that none of the recent Alien projects since like maybe Alien 3 really did. Prey, fantasy fan, Prey is amazing. We're going to talk about that franchise in the lightning round. Which, speaking of, should we move on to that? Have I rambled long enough? I'm sorry.
No, you're not rambling. This is a chat show. But yeah, we're going to do the Lakers lightning round, where we take 20 seconds and give our impressions upon a series of news stories and try to get through the main body of the show. Let's hit it. As per usual, no particular order. Why don't you ask me first, though? Because there are a lot of stories that turn to you all in a row.
Sounds good. Okay, so Josh Brolin has joined the cast of Knives Out 3 from Rian Johnson, which also includes Andrew Scott, Kerry Washington, Glenn Close, Jeremy Renner, and Mila Kunis.
The Knives Out movies just try to like dazzle us with the stars of Hollywood. I don't hate it. Why not? I remember like Stephen Sondheim was in the second one for a brief cameo appearance. They just get all these stars, Hugh Grant, Kate Hudson, there's all these stars in there are just kind of go see Edward Norton. Sure. Good strategy. Why not? Hey, Daniel, you are interested in Arcane, the TV show. Season 2 is coming in November. We even have a poster that it is my responsibility to put on the screen like this.
Yeah. Okay. So Arcane Season 2, it is coming. This is the animated show based on League of Legends, which is a popular PvP player versus player video game played online. Here we have, so that's Jinx on top and her sister Vi with the pink hair. Man, Arcane Season 1 was exceptional. I can't wait for Season 2.
Good.
Sorry, buzzer. I've been buzzed. Okay. Okay. So apparently they're making a Ghost of Tsushima movie. That's another very popular video game. And they are reportedly eyeing or thinking about casting Shogun star Hiroyuki Sanada, because obviously if they're samurai, why wouldn't you cast Hiroyuki Sanada?
Yeah, I'm glad that Shogun has produced some vavavoom in people's careers, and I'm sad that it produced so much vavavoom that they're gonna make a second season, possibly against conventional wisdom. But the guy was great in Shogun, Mr. Sanada. I'm glad he might get to be in a big splashy video game movie. Go AAA.
Yeah.
All right, Daniel. Yes. Brandon Sanderson. Noted author, completes work on Wind and Truth, the fifth Stormlight Archive book, due out in December. Will you read this?
Of course I will read it. I love the Stormlight Archive. I've read all of them. I will be reading Wind and Truth as soon as I physically can. And it's exciting. And basically he's finished the edit on it now. So he finished his first draft a while ago. Now he's done with all the edits. It's a way to a copy editor and a proofreader to make sure there are no typos. So Wind and Truth, baby, it's coming out this December. It's going to be a big freaking deal.
Why don't you ask me the next one after, and I'll ask you the one to talk about.
That sounds perfect. Bill Skarsgård is returning as Pennywise in an HBO IT TV series. I think it's Welcome to Derry.
I think you're right. Yeah, I mean, it'd be kind of disappointed if he didn't. If you're going to have, if you're going to make an IT TV show about the clown who eats people and eats spears, whatever he does, you might as well get back the guy who played the people eating clown. Do we need the show? Not sure yet, but I'm sure Bill Skarsgård will mug his way through it to nice effect. Daniel.
That's the theme of our current media landscape. Do we need this? Yes, not sure.
Elle Fanning will star in a new Predator movie from the director of Prey, Dan Trachtenberg. Sure. Are you psyched?
Obviously. Prey was incredible. It was easily one of the best Predator movies, if not the best Predator movie. Elle Fanning, I'm not too familiar with her work, but this new Predator movie is called Badlands. It is not a sequel to Prey. Those are in development too, but this is set in a near future, apparently. So it sounds like post-apocalypse Predator. I need to know more. I'm very curious. But I won't get to know more until we know more about this next thing, which is also news that we didn't have time to get to in the Bane part of our show, and we're going to talk about it now. Warner Brothers is apparently developing a 300 TV show, and they want Zack Snyder to direct.
Yeah, I guess, again, speaking of going back to the well of bringing back things over and 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 over, 300 kind of Greek war drama that featured a lot of six packs on stage, oil, swords, the muscular men shouting hurrah. Yeah, sure, maybe, whatever. Daniel, Paramount Plus has scrapped its live action Dungeons and Dragons show. Good thing, bad thing.
I kind of could care less thing. Mm-hmm. I think the thing more is that there hasn't been a sequel to the Dungeons and Dragons movie that was actually a very, very good movie. So I'm not too sad about this show. I just wish someone would get their act together and make a sequel to that really damn great movie that came out. Do that, Paramount. Then we can talk.
Do that.
And here's one. This had me, I tell you, absolutely incensed. This last bit of news had me incensed with the greed of it all. But I want to hear what you think of it, Dan. So Max, that's the streaming platform of HBO, Warner Brothers Discovery, Max has raised its prices effective immediately by $1 for both its ad-free and ultimate ad-free tiers. What do you think of this?
Yeah. They did it right before House of the Dragon airs, so that's got to be the reason. Like, they figure they can get some more money out of
obviously.
Folks.
Obviously.
Not much to say. I mean, they did it. That's why they did it, and we'll see if anybody punishes them for it or if they go along with it. It's up to you to see what happens.
That's right.
And that's all.
Nice.
And that's our show. We'll be back next Wednesday at 2 p.m. CST to talk about more things like this. And we're going to be starting when House of the Dragon starts airing. We will be here on Sunday nights recapping each new episode of House of the Dragon Season 2, reviewing it, giving you our insights, our thoughts, and our feelings. And that's our show. Come back next Wednesday. Come back Sundays. Not this Sunday, but the Sunday after this Sunday. And there's a dog on Daniel's screen. You might not be able to see it in pocket form, but it's cute. Leave us a like, leave us a comment, leave us subscribe to us. Robert Harris, I'll be glad to see you there. It should be a good time. And Viva House of the Dragon. See you guys later. And thank you for watching.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.